I'm going deep at the monocule. If it's the only thing I ever do, the car is where I sleep. Think that I might need a 62.
Welcome back to Any Given Monday. Very excited about this guest. A lot of you saw Jim Canales' interview after he finished T57 at Bermuda to keep his conditional card via his medical exemption. So we talked to him, first of all, about the process of what a medical exemption looks like, what that 6 months to a year off looked like. And, you know, we talked about the surgery. We talked about you're not on the course week to week. You're not in the locker room. All the things that you hear from sports athletes, but it happens in golf too. You just miss dinners and hanging out with your friends and seeing them on the course, practice rounds. So he talks a lot about that, and then talks about the process of coming back. I mean, he was shooting 75 week after week and just took some time. And then a really interesting small tidbit is an event in Maine that really kind of turned his career back around after he came back. So it is very good. So a quick word from Good Walk Coffee and then into Jim Canales.
We saw that there are plenty of people making great coffees, and a lot of the coffee companies solely base their brand around the quality of their coffee. But we knew quality coffee was just going to be the cost of entry for us. And so we wanted to make a coffee that someone could choose that also intersected with another passion point that they had. What made golf different when we thought about it was that it's beyond just a hobby. It's beyond a sport. It's something that envelops our whole lives, the lives of people involved in it, and is something that we thought that people would want to celebrate every time they opened a bag in the morning or had a cup of Good Walk coffee.
I just want to quickly talk about Good Walk. They have supported me for months now, and it's great coffee. My wife and I love it. My wife swears by it. And supporting them supports me. At the end of the day, they need to sell coffee. And so goodwalkcoffee.com and Fire Pit as the promo code will get you 20% off anything in your order. Welcome back to Any Given Monday. Really excited about this guest. I think it gives some great insight. We'll talk about what he has referred to as the greatest top 60 of his career. Jim Canales, thanks and welcome to Any Given Monday.
Thanks, Ryan. Happy to be here. Thanks for bringing me on.
No problem. So, I mean, I think a lot of people know what a medical exemption is, but they don't know, like, what the process. So let's start. I want to get into your entire career because it's very interesting even prior to this, but I think this is on a top of a lot of people's minds. So 2019, you're at the Canadian Open. You have earned your tour card. It's two-thirds through the season. How did you hurt your wrist, Jim? Let's start there.
Yeah, it was a kind of a prolonged thing. I had been having some wrist issues, some wrist pain for probably 2 months prior to that Canadian Open, like you said, in June. So I had issues kind of with pain and soreness for 2 months prior to that. And I just kept playing through it. You know, I'm just kind of one of those guys that's just going to play through pain and not complain about anything really. And in hindsight, you know, I should have gotten it checked out because like you said, at the Canadian Open, I think round two, I made a swing out of the thick rough, the really nasty hay at this golf course, and immediately just felt, you know, a really bad pain. Not quite, you know, it didn't have a snap or a, you know, sound or anything like that, but I knew right then that I had done something to it. And sure enough, I saw, 3 different doctors in the course of the next 2 weeks. And they all kind of confirmed it was a torn TFCC, triangular fibrocartilage complex, which is, you know, a combination of like the name says, cartilage, tendons, and ligaments. So it was probably partially torn before that. And if you catch it when it's partially torn, you can rest. You know, they say you can take 3 months off, something like that, and it'll heal itself, or it can heal itself. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, mine being fully torn, I had to have surgery. So I ended up at a doctor in Los Angeles, Dr. Steven Shin, who does surgeries for kind of some major league athletes, some professional athletes. So I was happy with how that went, and had about a month where I was in a cast, couldn't move it at all. And then about 3 months of physical therapy, and then I could start, you know, kind of swinging again slowly and steadily. And it was a long process. You know, it took, you know, I would say about a year, 12 months, maybe 13, 14 months before I hit that point where I felt fully 100% ready to go. So it was, it was a long year. You know, everything I read and saw and heard from Dr. Shin is that it was going to be, you know, 5 or 6 months until I was back at it, but it just was harder and longer than I thought. And then regaining, you know, competitive form, regaining, you know, scores on the golf course was a whole nother ballgame too.
Right. So let's go. I mean, I want to cover all this, Jim. I think there's a lot, there's so much in here that people kind of don't understand off the golf course, how that affects your life and all those things. I want to get into it. So did you know anything about the process of what a medical exemption entailed? Like, so you hurt yourself. I think you played the next week, and I assume you went out there and were like, okay, this is bad. And then start the process of going to a doctor. Did you know anything about the medical exemption process at all at that time?
No, I guess is the short answer. So, you know, like you said, you hear this term medical extension, right? Or all these guys are on their medical, you know, and I'm going, okay, whatever that is, you know, I probably won't ever get hurt. And then of course you do. And then I had no idea what it was or what to do, what the process was, what anything looked like. So it was funny, like you said, I got a cortisone shot after the Canadian Open and decided to play the next week at Travelers, and actually played decent, but I was just in major pain. I missed the cut by one, and I was it just happened that I was having lunch with an agent, somebody else's agent, earlier that week, and he was kind of telling me all about the medical process. That's when I kind of started to learn about it. And you know, it's a decent opportunity, you know, the tour provides, to go get checked out, to have surgery if you need it, like I did. And they essentially hold your tour starts that I would have played the rest of the year for when you're healthy and you come back, you can use those then. So, obviously you never want to get injured. But the tour's policy, you know, having that medical was really crucial for me, in saving my career in a way, if you will, and keeping those starts for when I came back healthy. But yeah, it's a crazy process. I mean, I spent hours and hours and hours on the phone with, the people from the tour behind the scenes in the competitions department, just trying to figure out, you know, when to take off, when to come back, what events I could play, everything and anything.
And basically, Jim, it's basically a doctor's note, right? I mean, you talked to, it sounds like your doctor was Dr. Shin. Dr. Shin, I assume, just fills out some sort of form saying your injury and how long you're going to be out and those kind of things. And then is there a board? Is there, who grants the medical exemption per se? Is there a person?
Yeah, it is a group. I'm not entirely sure what the group consists of, but like you said, they send me the documentation. You know, I talk to them on the phone and say I'm gonna, you know, go check out this injury. They send you documentation, and then I have Dr. Shin you know, fill out all this information. And for me, it was easy because, you know, he recommended I needed surgery, and and their process of approving the medical when surgery is needed is easy. They say, okay, that's obvious. You know, you're going to be out. For minor stuff, you know, you hear guys out on a minor medical, that's when you're out. I believe it's, something like 2 months or less. If you know, if your injury sidelines you 2 months or less, you have a minor medical. It might be 3 months. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah. So like you said, you know, if you're feeling hurt or have an injury, you know, they say you need a doctor's sign off, if you will. And then they, you know, you send all your paperwork in, and then they either approve it or deny it. And then, however long your sideline, that's when they kind of calculate how many events they will grant you. You know, they say, I believe I talked on the phone one time, you don't necessarily get all the starts that you'll be out. They have some formula, to calculate, you know, the number.
Because if you were healthy, basically you wouldn't play every event. I mean, depending on your category, obviously, but you're not going to be either. You're not going to play every event, or you're not eligible for every event based on your status. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So you essentially just play the number of events you would have gotten in on your number, you know, and they have all that data at the end of the year, stuff like that.
And so again, for people listening that don't know, you get X amount of starts, and we'll talk about how many starts you got, but you have to equal the points for conditional, for the people listening, is 150th to 126th. So you had to equal the points in this X amount of events that was 150th or 125th or all the scenarios that go with it, correct?
Right. So at the end of the 2019 season that I was playing, that I got injured in, you know, they have whoever took 125th place, you know, let's say that guy had 400 points, and whoever took 150th place, let's say he had 300 points. I either have to, when I return and play the rest of my medical starts that the tour granted me, I had to then add to the total I already was, you know, playing for in 2019. I had to add to that total with whatever, however many points I got in the events that I came back, like this fall, added to those points. And I had to, you know, either, you know, get more than 300 points for the 126 to 150 category, or more than 400 points to retain full status in the top 125. That's just an example. You know, those obviously weren't the exact points, but that's how, you know, kind of how it works.
Before we get into once you started playing again, I think a lot of people, I mean, me included, is you get injured, and if you're a relatively non-top 30 golfer in the world, people relatively quickly forget about you. I don't mean that in a mean way. It's just like you haven't shown up on a leaderboard in X amount of, and people forget what's happening at home and you're trying to get better. So let's just talk about that. I mean, you talked to a doctor that told you, you know, that you're going to be healthy in 5 months, and it took 13. Can you describe the frustration? I mean, I assume, Jim, you're questioning whether you're ever going to come back. It's hard to, I mean, you've been on the road your whole life, and now you're at home not being able to do the thing. I mean, your career, you're basically at home not doing what you want to do.
Right. Yeah. You touch on, you know, some great points there. Like you said, 13 months. I mean, that's just a long time. The first 2 months I was, you know, sidelined from the injury, you know, rehabbing, I was probably depressed. I was just down in the dumps. I was, sitting home alone, trying to get my wrist to move, you know, 10 degrees, 20 degrees, after the cast came off. So, you know, just couldn't do anything. Couldn't do the job I loved, and seeing, you know, fellow pros week in, week out, you know, my friends, all of a sudden that just comes to a complete halt. You know, I have friends here, obviously, but you know, you miss seeing all the people you see every single week, and obviously playing the game that I love to play. And so that was kind of a realization for me, at least, that, you know, my priorities probably were not in the right place. So it was, it turned out to be a really good opportunity for me to become more grounded, one in my faith and one in my family, or two in my family. And to realize that, you know, whereas golf sure is what I love to do and I want to make a career out of it, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the most important thing in my life. So it was probably a blessing in disguise that I had to go through that, you know, on my own. And anybody who's had, you know, a big injury like that has the same thing. You know, you hear about it a lot when someone's sidelined like that, that, you know, depression can set in and it can just be really hard mentally. So had to kind of switch my attitude. A couple months in, I was really not in a good place. So I switched it, you know, I switched my attitude to an attitude of gratitude. Everything in this world, everything in your life is there for a reason. It's the struggle that you're presented has a purpose to it, right? So I just had to realize that and then work hard. And like you said, I mean, it still took 13 months for me to be fully back and swinging with no pain, no soreness, anything like that in my wrist. So, and then that wasn't even the end of the process. Cause like I said, I had to find my form after that. So, and that took a while. You know, I'm just going out every day shooting 75 and thinking,
yeah,
you know, why can't I score? Where's my scoring gone? And that took a while. So, it's really something brutal to go through, and mentally it was a challenge, but I'm glad to have gone through it in a way. Cause now I feel like I'm a little more grounded and a better person because of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in those times, Jim, I mean, when you're going out and shooting 75, like you talked about, you get some warm-up starts. And again, we can talk about that too on the Corn Ferry in 2020, when you finally start playing, you're not playing well out there. I mean, I assume there's some questioning whether you're ever going to get back. I mean, it's only natural, right? That you question whether you're going to get back to playing like you were prior to the injury.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely natural. I was definitely questioning it, that, you know, can I still do this? That was one aspect I hadn't really thought about before I had surgery, is when I come back, you know, I'll have to work at becoming a good golfer again, a good scorer again. Mm-hmm. Like you see on TV, all these guys, you know, oh, birdie, eagle, you know, right, another birdie. And you're going, okay, well, you know, that was me before I took the injury, had surgery, and then I'm coming back and I'm just parring everything, and a bogey will sneak in every once in a while. I'm going, well, this just isn't right. So yeah, it took a while, and like you said, you know, getting those warm-up starts on the Corn Ferry Tour really, really helped. And like you said, I was still struggling. I was still trying to find my game. I do believe my swing changed when I came back from what it was before the injury. I was way more upright than my old swing. I had help from a coach out in Long Beach, luckily, that James O, that he helped me immensely find my swing again, and help with my short game big time. So a couple big things like that helped me, but it was just a long process, even getting the scores back.
Do you remember, Jim, in that process, like a particular moment where something clicked that you started to score again, or is it just gradual? You're working on something and eventually little things come back slowly, and then finally, you know, X amount of time down the road, you're starting to shoot, you know, 68, 69 again? Or is there a moment that a teacher or a moment on a course that you remembered that like kind of clicked and you started to be your old self as far as like scoring wise?
Yeah. There really was. It's a pretty funny story. So, like you said, I was playing some warm-up events in 2020 on Corn Ferry Tour, and then in the fall season they had the double wraparound, so I got some starts in the fall, and then I came back and played a few of my PGA Tour starts early in 2021, Farmers, Pebble Beach, and I was just playing kind of bad, and then I wasn't getting in tournaments. I believe maybe because of COVID, that, you know, just a lot of guys mm-hmm. were playing on the PGA Tour. So my category just, it wasn't getting to my number, which maybe looking back was a good thing.
Yeah.
So I was able to play Corn Ferry events, and I was playing through the summer, just kind of playing bad, missing a lot of cuts. And then I was home for a few days after missing a cut, and I was debating whether to go to Maine for the Maine Open on the Corn Ferry Tour or not. And I was talking to my wife, and I was going, I just don't want to go. I'm playing.
That's a long way to go. Yeah.
That's a long way to go to just shoot, you know, 72, 72 and miss the cut again. Like,
right.
You know, I was just not really, I said, I just kind of want to shut it down before the off season, right? Or before the end of the regular season. And she said, you know, well, what good is that going to do? You know, you just sitting around here, not getting more competitive reps. You know, she really believed in me, and in playing more and more tournaments, that was going to come. So anyway, I said, all right, I'm going to go play. And so I went out there, and this course is beautiful, and Portland, Maine is beautiful, obviously. And I just, something, like you said, something clicked in the practice round where I was hitting these shots off the fairway. My iron, I was just really struggling with my irons, and this grass, some of the grass was kind of thatchy underneath. Like the turf wouldn't break up into a divot. It was clumpy, and it just felt really bad. And when I was hitting down on it, it was almost like hurting my wrist just to hit the ball, or it would hurt anybody's wrist to hit the ball. If you're hitting down on it, you know, and all of a sudden I go, you know, maybe I'm hitting down on it a little bit too much. Maybe my swing's a little steep. I've always been a picker of the golf ball, you know, mm-hmm. Steve Stricker style. So I say, all of a sudden, I'm just going to try to pick the ball off every fairway. And anyway, played an amazing tournament, finished, what was it, T5 or T6? You know, just an incredible event. It was awesome to, you know, be in the mix. And I don't know, for whatever reason, that little change kind of got me back to playing well with my irons. And I've just been scoring really well ever since then. So it was just kind of funny.
You still pick it now, Jim?
Yeah. I still try to just pick it off every fairway and off the tees on the par threes, even with, you know, like 3-wood, 5-wood going into par fives. I just pick it for the most part, you know, mm-hmm. every once in a while, you know, if the ball's sitting bad, you got to go get it. But picking it is just, that's just the way I hit it. That's just the way that works best for me.
It always comes back to the wife, Jim. Always comes back to the wife.
Exactly. Exactly. What's the saying? The husband is the head and the wife is the neck. She moves the head where she wants it to, exactly. to go.
All right. So you missed four cuts in 2020. And then, I mean, this is, I get my question is, I mean, you always live as a pro golfer, especially as a grinder, you live under the pressure of knowing what the number is, whether that's cut on an individual week or top 100 or top 75 in the Corn Ferry or whatever. You're always under that sort of pressure. Was the medical pressure, because it's a hard number, you know, X amount of tournaments for X amount of points, was it different or was it very much the same, Jim?
It was different for sure. It was a pressure I had never felt before. It was a pressure I didn't expect to feel, because, you know, I had six events on my medical to make something like 152 points. So they tell you that right then. Here's your number. Go out and make 152 points to keep your card, you know, or whatever it was, 69 points for conditional status. So, okay. So there's your two numbers, six events. And then, like you said, I go out and miss my cut in the first four events. Okay. Now all of a sudden I only have two events left to make 152 points or 69 points. And it's realistically, it's no different than if I had played out the rest of that season, the 2019 season, and I played six events and I still had that same amount of points to make to get my card for the next year. But something about
like an actual number, you're kind of live like when you're in the money list, you can be like, oh, this could happen and that can happen.
Right.
But I assume having like a hard, I need a 10th and an 18th or whatever must just be like a world you don't generally live in.
Right. It's really brutal. The hard number. Here's how many points you need to make. And then the other factor is every single time I show up to a PGA event, you know, all my friends and peers, you know, see me, hey, Hard K, what's going on? Are you feeling healthy? Or how many events do you have left? How many points do you need? So I'm hearing that every time, and I'm having to tell, you know, every single person that I see that
I've said 152 points for a year. Times.
Yeah, exactly. I say it 90 times, and every guy goes, oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of like, you are, geez.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going, well, I got the full season to play, so I don't have to worry. Well, good luck with that. You know, I'll see you out there. So it was, it was an immense amount of pressure, especially when it came down to that last event. I mean, obviously played super well in Napa and just, a definite bittersweet moment when I found out, you know, afterwards that I was 3 points shy of conditional status with one event left. I knew, oh gosh, now I'm going to have an extreme amount of pressure going into the last event, needing to make the cut to have any status next year.
It has to be, I mean, we'll talk about making the cut, but you go down to Bermuda, you know, you have to make the cut. And of course, of all weeks to get the worst end of the draw, and it wasn't close, worst end of the draw. I mean, you shoot 76 in the morning, which wasn't great, but it wasn't bad in the other morning scores. I mean, it has to seem, I guess, you turned it around the next day and made the cut, but some of it has to just seem unfair, right, Jim? I mean, you're like, come on, dude. On my only event that I really, really, really have to make the cut, and I get the bad end of the draw. I assume there's some, like, you got to feel sorry for yourself. I think it's only human nature to feel sorry for yourself.
Yeah, it's really funny because my dad laughs at me because it seems like every time there's a bad end of the draw, you know, quote unquote, bad end of the draw, I am on the bad end. He goes, I don't know what it is about you. He said, you always get that, you know, it's really funny. So, you know, I was talking through whether to go to Bermuda with my family. And we were, you know, because it was my last start and I had hurt, you know, I had not been to Bermuda before, but every player I'm talking to, every caddy I'm talking to says it's crazy windy there. It can be really, really windy. You can get a bad end of the draw really easily because it can blow 40 in the morning with rain and then stop in the afternoon, which in this case, that is what happened to me. Thursday was blowing 25 sustained with bouts of rain, and you know, and then I sit down for lunch and all of a sudden the sky's clear and the wind falls and I'm going, I don't even feel that bad about the 76 I just shot. I had to battle on the second nine just to shoot 76. So it was, that was one of the cons, you know, when we were going over pros and cons of whether to go to Bermuda, that was one of the cons of going. And it was just a bummer that it happened. And I was kind of upset about it, you know, sitting in the hotel Thursday evening, watching coverage on TV, which I probably shouldn't have been doing, but I'm watching it and it just looks perfect out there. And these guys are, you know, shooting 5, 6, 7 under. I go, that was not, you know, in play on Thursday.
Yeah.
So,
and just quickly for the people listening, just because Jim would have got into an event on his number doesn't mean he has to go. And that's why he talks about, you know, especially on your last start, you want to pick something that is going to, when you have to make the cut, something that's going to work for you. So,
right.
So you tee it up the next day, Jim, knowing basically you need a pretty good round, a very good round to make the cut. It has to be almost overwhelming pressure teeing it up. No, you have to shoot 66 in this case to like keep your career going.
Yeah, right. It is. It's a, like I was saying earlier, it's a whole different pressure. It's all, you know, something I'd never dealt with before. I did take solace, I guess, in knowing that I had done that, you know, a lot before, and playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, a lot of times you tee it up on Friday after shooting, you know, let's say 72,
right?
You know, you have to shoot 66 to make the weekend. Some of those cuts are so low, or a, you know, a 70, 69, you could be packing your bag. So I know I had done it before. I was just going into the round, like I was saying earlier, with an attitude of gratitude, just saying, you know, we're here in Bermuda. This is incredible. Whether this is, you know, quote unquote, the end or not, I'm happy with how everything has gone up to this point. And, but I, at the same time, I still really wanted to make the cut, to at least give myself a chance at,
right.
You know, a cut alone wouldn't, you know, totally do it. I still needed a 67th or better, to get at least conditional status, but I knew I had to make the cut at least to have a chance. And so just playing the day, you know, I was okay nerves wise on the front nine, was playing well. And then the back nine, it just kind of hit me. I was just kind of shaky the whole time. I was just kind of nervy, especially on 15, 16, bogeyed 15, 16 to drop what, two behind the cut. And I'm going, oh gosh, you know, what are we doing here? But knew I had a par five and a relatively easy par four coming in, and I could do it, and stuffed one in there close on 17 and made a clutch putt for eagle. But yeah, just the whole time, just really an uneasy feeling. And then a feeling of relief when I finally did make the cut. But it was stressful, man. It really was.
Are you normally a scoreboard watcher, Jim? I mean, like in a normal average event?
Not really. I tend to just look them on the back nine on Friday and then the back nine on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're close, if you know, you know, inside every golfer, they have an intuition that's incredibly good. And I can feel, you know, on the back nine on a Friday, okay, I'm right around the cut. What do I need to do? I'll look at it then. And then on Sunday, okay, I feel like I'm right around the lead. What do I need to do to win this golf tournament? So that's about it for scoreboard watching. Otherwise, I just want to leave it alone.
But you knew you needed two coming in on, I mean, 17 and 18. You knew where you stood?
I knew, yeah. There was a leaderboard right there on 17T. You know, it said the projected cuts. Sometimes those change and you don't know for sure.
Yeah, you were playing relatively late, but yes, right.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so you're making an unreal eagle. I mean, where does it rank? Where does that hole rank? I mean, you had a couple holes, obviously, throughout the week, but I mean, where does that hole rank in holes played in your career, Jim? Does it rank? I mean,
yeah, for sure. It's got to be top five rank all time, maybe top two. I mean, I don't know if there's a better hole for me, just because of the circumstances to be able to hit a good drive. The drive area on that hole was pretty small, to hit that fairway, to hit a good iron shot in there, and to make like a pretty good slider, left to right slider, under that immense pressure that I was feeling. Got to be top two. Another one that comes to mind is I made the cut at Torrey Pines, hitting 18 green in two. And I remember being super proud of that too. But anyway, that was, it's gotta be one of the top moments for me.
So you make the cut. I mean, there's gotta be obviously a huge amount of relief. And then Sunday comes and you basically find yourself back in exactly the same scenario as you were on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a crazy weekend. I think I shot maybe 2 under on Saturday, which was a decent round, but it didn't really vault me up the leaderboard a whole lot. And since there were, I don't even remember, 75 or 78 golfers that made the weekend, I still had to play well on Sunday to be, you know, 67th or better, essentially. And like I was saying earlier, everybody goes, oh, what do you need? What do you need? I need 67th position or better, 67th position or better.
Right.
And, you know, like all mental, you know.
Yeah, every mental coach will tell you to block that out.
Right. Exactly. Right. They'll all say, you know, don't think about that. Think about, you know, trying to win the golf tournament. But so maybe I was falling down the wrong path there. But so, yeah, essentially teed it up on Sunday. And for whatever reason, the back nine there at Bermuda just did not fit me well or something. So I started off bogey, bogey on Sunday and made a couple more bogey. I mean, it was bad conditions, obviously, if anybody watched on TV. I mean, it was terrible conditions, but I turned in 4 over well outside that 67th number. At that point, I'm going, you know, this is bad. This is really bad. And I actually remember telling myself out loud, saying, no, this is not how it's going to end. You know, we're not going to finish like this. Let's turn it around. And managed to, you know, make a few birdies coming in. Still had, you know, a decent amount of pressure with the difficult eighth hole. Made a nice birdie on 7, difficult eighth hole, par 3, bogeyed that. So I think I had to at least, yeah, I mean, it was 230 straight into the fan. Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? I was almost laying up on that hole and then just trying to get up and down. But anyway, I think I had to par at least the last hole, which was downwind, thankfully. You know, knocked a good drive out there, hit it in there to 12 feet. And I just said, let's just go ahead and make this putt and just, you know, get all the question out of it. You're right. So luckily rolled that in, had a really good putt and just a wave of relief kind of swept over me. It's obviously not ideal to be in the conditional category over a full card, but it's something. I have, you know, whatever they say, 10 to 15 starts in any given year for that category. So, gosh, just the relief that swept over me and it was amazing. You know, all my friends there at the course were just so happy for me, congratulatory, staff and everybody there that knew what was going on. It was just so awesome.
Yeah. I assume off the course, Jim, I mean, there's just that pressure builds for everybody. I mean, your wife, your dad is with you, yeah, caddies for you. And as much as they support you, they feel that pressure too. I mean, you said in your interview that was with the tour is, I mean, all these people support you. It's a relief for everybody. It's not just, I mean, this is your career. And so a lot of people are behind the scenes supporting you, just a relief for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, this whole thing has weighed not only on me, but my family, my wife. You know, she's had to pick me up at times and say, you know, we're going to make it through this, you know. And like I was saying earlier, this is not my whole life now, but it's my career, and it's certainly important to me, my wife, my family. And it was kind of my dad who said, let's just go to Bermuda and get this medical over with. He said, yeah, whether you make it or not, at least it'll be done. At least this whole, you know, pressure, this whole situation will be over, you know. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. I can't keep this rolling. I can't keep dealing with this, you know, in the back of my head. It was just, I don't want to say destroying my life, but it was really just weighing me down, you know, day by day. So just happy to have it, happy to have it done with. It's just something I think a lot of people don't really see you know, when you see, you know, the leaders of the golf tournament every week in, week out, obviously their lives are fantastic, and that's where I want to be. And that's where I will be. But the guys that are, you know, in the middle or toward the back, there's just a lot of stuff going on that you don't see.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, like you said, you'd never think that you'd be this happy about conditional status, because it means a lot of Mondays and means a lot of waiting around and being alternates and those kind of things. But it also means you have full Corn Ferry status. You can, and I mean, with an 11th and a made cut in the two events you've played, regardless of what happens, if you play anywhere decently in your starts, at the very least, you're going to be in Corn Ferry finals, and have a chance to get your full card back. So, I mean, it's huge from so many factors.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Huge to be able to just know that you're playing, you know, a good amount of PGA Tour events for obviously a big, you know, a big paycheck. And like you said, you know, the good start in Napa, will help. I'll shuffle up in our category, you know, since I'm at the back of that 126 to 150 category at the moment. I didn't get into RSM Classic, on my numbers, but shuffling up, that'll help hopefully for, you know, Palm Springs and Farmers and other events down the road. So it'll be a long year. It'll be a busy year. That's what I told my wife too. I said, this is going to be a crazy year between PGA Tour.
For the people that don't know what will happen, I don't know, Jim, but I mean, I don't know exactly what Jim's plans are, but I know enough about golf that a lot of Jim's life will be Monday to the PGA Tour Monday, with a backup flight to the Corn Ferry event, wherever that is. And sometimes we'll include flights back as he moves up the alternate list.
Exactly. Yeah, you just never know, week in, week out, and that alternate list could not move at all, or it could move 10 people and all of a sudden you're in. So like you said, it's you got to be flexible on a year like this. So that's why I told my wife, we may be traveling a lot.
Yes.
We'll see.
All right. I mean, I think your backstory, how you got to the PGA Tour is so unusual. I want to talk about that, Jim. So grew up in a small Colorado town. I read today on your LinkedIn page, your graduating class was 113. So we're talking a small town.
Yeah. Basalt, Colorado. Beautiful. Just north of Aspen, you know, 20 miles or so. So I grew up big skier, skier, snowboarder, and then in the summer, obviously golf a lot. So those were kind of my two major things when I was growing up. It's a great place to grow up. I really enjoyed it. And there was actually a few good golfers to come out of there. A couple went to play collegiately as well. Other places, and my brother, 2 years younger than me, he's an amazing golfer. Didn't play collegiately, but he's a stick too, man. He loves it now.
Awesome. So you weren't recruited by anyone. So you go to School of Mines. I assume that was educational based decision, Jim. I mean, like you didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't golf related. I read today that was like the first full-time coach they had hired just before you, right?
Right. Yeah. Tyler Kimball at Colorado School of Mines. Yeah. In beautiful Golden, Colorado. So I knew, you know, I was really good at math and science in high school and knew engineering would be a really good discipline for me. I wasn't highly recruited for golf at high school. I was a late bloomer, really got a lot better, you know, junior and senior year of high school. And by then, you know, all these colleges have all their players set. So the School of Mines ended up being perfect for me. I got a great degree in civil engineering, which I went there originally to do, and got to play, you know, golf all 4 years, Division II. We got better and better every year. We made the national championships. When I was a senior, I took second place at national championships to fellow PGA Tour player Josh Creel, lost in a playoff to him. And my whole collegiate experience was incredible. Coach Tyler Kimball believed in me, so couldn't have ended up at a better place.
I read that you didn't really go there thinking about pro golf, but obviously as your career took off, was there any thought, Jim, or any pressure from other people maybe once you started to have a successful career that you should go to transfer to a Division I program, or did you not even think about that?
Honestly, I didn't even think about it. No one approached me about it. I wasn't, like I said, I didn't think about it at all. I had a really good freshman year there. I had a really good junior and senior year. But I didn't even cross my mind at the time. I was not thinking about playing professional golf really until senior year, when I started having a lot of success and a lot of tournament victories. So when I was originally there, I was really dedicated to my schoolwork, and I just happened to be getting a lot better at golf every single year. And then, like I said, finished second at the national championships in 2012. And I said, let's give this a go. You know, I think I'd be silly not to do it. Since my golf game has gotten so much better.
Yeah. So when you turned pro, did you have a timeline in, I mean, everybody, you know, when you turn pro, people are aware of how hard it is, but did you have a timeline of how long you were going to try or anything like that? Or did you just kind of take it year by year?
Yeah. So my thought process was always, I'm going to keep playing professionally as long as I'm seeing steady increases in how I'm playing in tournament results, mm-hmm. essentially. So if I'm having success or greater success every single year, I'm just going to keep at it. And if I had the financial resources, obviously that's really difficult for a lot of guys coming out of college. I know that I had to work a little bit, and I had some people behind me that were backing me from Basalt. And that was huge. You know, my first year as a pro, I really struggled. I played the Gateway Tour, if people remember that, in Phoenix. Yeah, it was a great place to play. When I came out of college, they were having full fields, huge purses. I mean, it was a really, really, really good tour.
Glory days of mini tours, Jim.
It was incredible.
Yeah. Those were
the days.
Those were the days.
Good old Gateway Tour. My grandparents live in Arizona and Phoenix, so it was perfect for me. I went down there and played probably three seasons on the Gateway Tour, and just got steadily better every single year. So I was kind of meeting my mm-hmm. my check marks, you know, of getting better every single year, and then finally got through Q school, you know, got my at the time web.com card, and played on that tour for 2 years before getting my PGA Tour card through Korn Ferry Finals.
Well, I mean, Jim, it's an awesome story. Obviously, a lot of people were following it. For Jim will never say this, but one of the nicest guys out there. I
appreciate that.
Caddying for Mark a little bit here and there. I see Jim a lot now, and him and his dad are always the nicest people, always willing to ask questions or answer questions and send him a million messages. So thanks for that, and thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. I'm sure I'll see you a lot this year at a bunch of Mondays along the way, or next year.
Yeah, exactly. All the best to the family, Jim. Thanks again for the time, and I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
All right. And thanks again to Jim for that great insight. I mean, it was really interesting for me to kind of hear the process of the exemption and then talk about his road back. Just awesome. I mean, you have your career or status at the very least hanging in the balance, and what it's like to kind of live in a life where everyone asks you over and over again and you know exactly what you need. It's just a different a thing that a lot of golfers will never go through. So thanks again to them. Thanks for listening, and on to next week.